I want to start with showing a series of pictures and just kind of walk you through what's happening in these photos here. This first picture, this is a wedding ring that someone dropped down a garbage disposal.
Oh.
I'm assuming it was accidental. So they went to the couple went to a jeweler and they said, is there any way possible for you to fix this? Is there any way to restore this ring? Like, this is really valuable. It means a lot to us. Is there any way to fix it? So he began the process of restoration. There were several steps involved. First of all, he had to use a pair of pliers to kind of open it up a little bit so he could do some work on it. Next, he had to put it onto that over there on the other side of the screen. That's a tool called a ring mandrel and a jeweler's hammer to get it back into the correct shape so that it would be perfectly round again and shaped like a ring should be shaped. After that, in the left-hand side there, you see him filing down some of the rough edges, getting rid of some of the parts that were sticking out where they shouldn't be. Next, at the top there, he's replacing some of the areas where gouges were taken out, like massive chunks taken out of this ring by the blades spinning around in the trash disposal. He had to replace all of that. And then down at the bottom, he's replacing some of the diamonds. Diamonds are really hard to damage, but because of how fast things are spinning down there in those trash disposals, it damaged some of the diamonds, so he had to replace some of those. And then he had to polish it and buff it, and that's the finished product.
Wow.
Looks like new, doesn't it? This is what restoration looks like. We talked about restoration a few weeks ago and how God is the God who restores. And restoration means taking something that has been damaged, taking something that has been messed up to the point that it looks like there's no hope for it to be repaired any longer, but then it is repaired and it's brought back as though it was brand new and sometimes even better than when you started. That's what restoration is. And as we said a few weeks ago, restoration, it's not a quick thing. It's a process. It takes time. It's not immediate. It requires change. It is difficult. And it's worth it. For the next 3 weeks, we're going to talk about marriages. And the sad reality is that a lot of marriages look like that. A lot of marriages look as though they've been thrown into a trash disposal. And they've been all banged up and mangled and out of shape. And they look nothing like they were intended to look from the beginning. To where what was once a beautiful love story has been crumpled and mangled, sometimes by harsh words, sometimes by neglect, but it's completely damaged to the point that you wonder, is it possible for this to be restored? And what I want to say at the outset is this: this is not what marriage should be. That's not what any of our marriages should look like. That is not God's design for marriage. God spells out very clearly what marriage looks like in both the Old and New Testaments. We're going to start in Genesis chapter 2, verse 22. Here's what it says. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib, and he brought her to the man. At last the man exclaimed, "This one is bone from my bone and flesh from my flesh. She will be called woman because she was taken from man." This explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. Ephesians 5:31, as the scriptures say, a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Matthew chapter 19, starting in verse 4, Jesus is speaking here. "Haven't you read the scriptures?" Jesus replied. "They record that from the beginning, God made them male and female." And he said, "This explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. Since they are no longer two, but one, let no one split apart what God has joined together." These verses spell out what God envisions marriage to be. And they tell us a few important things about marriage. Number one, marriage is between a man and a woman. Number two, marriage is God's idea. It wasn't man's invention. It was God's idea. And that means he has a plan and a purpose for it. And number three, marriage is meant to last. Now, there's a fourth component, but we're going to get to that later on. For right now, I just want to hone in on these first two. First of all, marriage is between a man and a woman. The verses that we just looked at make it very clear. It says a man will leave his father and mother, right? That's a couple. That's a father and a mother. That's a man and a wife, a man and a woman. And it says this man leaves his father and mother, is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. Again, it is a man and a woman. And all through the scriptures, from cover to cover, we see that this is what marriage is. It is one man and one woman. I don't care what the Supreme Court says. I don't care what the politicians say. I don't care what our culture tries to tell us is normal and acceptable. I care what God says. And God says in His Word, marriage is one man and one woman. When two people of the same gender come together sexually, the Bible does not call that marriage. The Bible calls that sin. And you can dress it up with rings and vows and a ceremony and a fake pastor. That doesn't impress God. It doesn't change His view of things, and it does not honor Him. Marriage is when a man leaves his father and mother, is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. Marriage is one man and one woman. Now, that is by design. And there are several reasons for that. I just want to talk about one of them today, and it's this. It's by design because men and women are different. And those, like, you know this, right? Men and women, we're different from each other. And those differences matter. Those differences are by design, and those differences have a purpose. And so what that means is that since we are different, the husband and the wife, they both bring something into the marriage that the other person cannot provide. And the differences that we have between us, they're not just cosmetic differences, right? They're not just surface differences. They can't be ignored or rewritten by surgery or hairstyles or hormone pills. They run much deeper than that. Let me just share one of the differences between men and women. The first 6 weeks after a child is conceived, for those first 6 weeks as that child is developing, you can't tell the difference. You can't tell if it's a boy or a girl. We all look the same. At week 7, something miraculous happens. At week 7, the mother's body releases a chemical. If the embryo is a female, nothing changes. If the embryo is a male, then that triggers the release of testosterone. And that changes everything. Testosterone makes men far different from women, right? It's what makes us more aggressive. It's what drives us sexually. It changes everything. The other thing that happens when that chemical is released is, again, if it's a girl, if the embryo is a girl, nothing changes. If it's a boy, that chemical physically changes the brain if it is a boy. And here's what that looks like later on in life. One of the things we know about men and women is that men are laterally brained, which means we use one side of the brain at a time. Everybody knows this to be true too, right? Women are different. Women are bilateral. They use both sides of the brain simultaneously. And the reason for that is there are more connecting fibers between both sides of the brain for women. There are more connecting fibers. They're larger connecting fibers. And again, that's one of the things that changes. When that chemical is released in week 7, it changes the physical makeup of a boy's brain. And so we don't have as many connecting fibers. So we tend to focus on one side of the brain, whereas women have access to both sides simultaneously. Now, for that reason, at any given moment, women can take in more information and process it more quickly than most men can. For example, we're not going to do this, but if I was to put a series of images up here on the screen, like one per second, just real quick, one after another for 60 seconds and say, okay, write down the images as you're seeing them. Most of the women, you would get most of them right. Most of us men, by the time we get to the second or third one, we'd be saying, what was that? Did you see that? Could you back it up? Like, we would be totally lost. We'd be thoroughly confused, right? And we know this to be true. Our brains function differently because it is literally wired differently between a man and a woman. Now, another difference between how our brains function, and this is really important, is that men tend to favor the left side of the brain, and women tend to favor the right side of the brain. And that is significant. The left side of the brain houses language, logic, problem solving, and spatial awareness. So for men, what that means, spatial awareness, that's like the distance of things and how far we are from things and measuring that kind of stuff. Men are more gifted at that because that is a left brain thing. So the way that that manifests, and this goes to a conversation we had before church with Justin and with my parents, is when it comes to driving, like learning to drive. Any of you who have, you just got your driver's permit, you just got your driver's license. So both Luke and Jonah. So as you're, let's say you've got your father in the car and then you've got your mother in the car. There's a big difference in how they react to things, right? Big difference. And you see this like as a married man for several years now, like I see the difference too. Like we're driving along and there'll be a car half a mile ahead of us and Sheila's like digging into the dashboard like, oh no, we're gonna hit him. It's just a reality. It's just this spatial awareness thing where men are more gifted at that than women are. It's just the way our brains function. So here's how this works. The left side of the brain is language, logic, problem solving, spatial awareness. The right side of the brain is more creative and relational. So women tend to focus more on relationships and the health of relationships than men do. Men tend to focus more on practical things. So the right brain is relational. Left brain is practical. Right brain is emotional. Left brain is logical. That's why she is more tuned in to the health of the relationship than he is. And he is more tuned in to how to fix things than she is. It's why she's more interested in talking about problems than finding solutions to them. And he's more interested in solving problems than talking about those problems. And that's just some of the differences we see between men and women. And those differences, the fact that we focus on different parts of the brain, that is a big part of why men and women, we think differently, we communicate differently, we act differently, we process emotions differently, we respond to things differently. It is literally hardwired into our brains. So what that means, ladies, is when your husband gives a logical answer to an emotional question, you're talking about something that affects you emotionally and you just want him to listen to and understand, and his response is, well, here's what you need to do. Here's how to fix that. Here's the solution. He's not trying to annoy you, even though it can be annoying. He's not doing that intentionally. He's using one of his strengths. He's responding the way his brain tells him to respond. It's just a natural thing for him. And in the same way, men, when she wants to talk, not about anything specific, but just for the sake of talking. And 20 minutes into the conversation, you're saying, what's the point? Is she ever going to get to the point? Is this conversation ever going to end? She's not trying to annoy you or take up your time. She's trying to connect with you. Because for her, what matters more than the point of the conversation is having the conversation. Because it connects the two, and all the ladies are saying yes to that, because it connects the two of you emotionally. Those are some of the simple differences. Now, a few years ago, somebody put together this video that I think illustrates really well some of the differences between men and women and how we respond to things. I need to turn the volume up a little bit here.
It's just, there's all this pressure, you know? And sometimes it feels like it's right up on me and I can just feel it, like literally feel it in my head, and it's relentless. And I don't know if it's going to stop. I mean, that's the thing that scares me the most, is that I don't know if it's ever going to stop.
Oh. Well, you do have a nail in your head.
It is not about the nail.
Are you sure? Because, I mean, I'll bet if we got that out of there.
Stop trying to fix it.
No, I'm not trying to fix it. I'm just pointing out that maybe the nail is causing...
You always do this. You always try to fix things when what I really need is for you to just listen.
See, I don't think that is what you need. I think what you need is to get the nail out.
See, you're not even listening now.
Okay, fine. I will listen. Fine.
It's just... Sometimes it's like... There's this achy... I don't know what it is. And all my sweaters are snagged. I mean, all of them.
That sounds really hard.
Thank you.
Come on, if you would just...
Don't...
All right, so that's a pretty good example, right? So here's where to go with that. Ladies, sometimes when he's trying to help you with things, it's because there's something he sees that maybe you're not aware of, and he just wants to help. We're different from each other, right? We handle things differently. She wants to connect. She wants to be emotionally connected, and he wants to fix things. So here's what that means. Rather than saying, ladies, rather than saying, he's so emotionally distant, he never listens to me, maybe he sees some answers to the problems you're facing. Maybe he sees some answers to the things that you want to talk about, and he's just trying to help you. And men, rather than saying, she's so emotional and she's always trying to change me, Maybe she sees some problems in the relationship and it matters to her and she's talking to you about it because she wants the relationship to be healthy. The point is, men and women are different. That's by design. Those differences are good and we can learn and grow if we listen to each other. Here's the second thing I want to focus on is that marriage is God's idea, not ours. And the fact that marriage is God's idea means he has a purpose for it. In Genesis 2, it says that God brought the woman to the man. It was God's idea. He initiated the whole thing. In Ephesians chapter 5, it says that marriage is an illustration of what it means for Christ and his church, his people, to be connected together. It was God's idea from the very beginning. In Matthew, Jesus says, let no one split apart what God has joined together. God is the one who brought them together. God is involved in this process. It was his idea. And what that means is he has a purpose for it. And that purpose is oneness. See, when God brings a husband and wife together, the purpose goes further than just emotion. It goes deeper than the promises we make on our wedding day. It goes deeper than sex. It goes deeper than friendship. He says over and over again, the two will become one. And Ephesians 5:32 says that this is a great mystery, that two would become one. Here's what that means. It means that this is not okay. It's not okay to just accept that this is the way our marriage is. It's not okay to say, well, we just have to live with that. That's the way things are, and it's never going to change. We live in the same house. We raise the same kids, but we're emotionally separate. We're spiritually separate. We live our own separate lives. We're just like roommates. No. God did not call Adam and Eve to be roommates. He called them to be one. And God did not call you and your spouse to be roommates. He called you to be one. You are one with that person, which means you have a new identity. So as of May 19th, 1990, I'm not just Dave, I'm Sheila's husband. I'm not just Dave Hunter, I'm Dave and Sheila, because we are one. And that oneness means this, that when I make decisions, I should never make those decisions solely based on how they affect me. I should make those decisions based on how are they going to affect my wife? How are they going to affect our marriage? How are they going to affect our oneness? That matters because we are called to oneness. Solomon wrote a lot about relationships. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4, a very familiar passage, he says this, starting in verse 9. He says, two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm. But how can one be warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. This is what marriage should be. What he shows us here is a picture of two people fighting for each other, not against each other. Two people who are protecting each other, not protecting themselves from each other. Two people who are defending each other, not defending themselves from each other. This leads to what I call the warfare principle. It's something I talk about every time I do premarital counseling, every time I do marriage counseling. The warfare principle says this: your marriage is under attack and your spouse is not the enemy. Your marriage is under attack. You have an enemy intruding into your marriage. I think it's interesting that right after Paul gives instructions to husbands and wives in Ephesians chapter 5, right after that, he talks about spiritual warfare in Ephesians chapter 6. That's not by coincidence. That's by design. It's also interesting that right after God brings Adam and Eve together as husband and wife, at the end of Genesis chapter 2, he brings them together, and it says, the last two verses, it says a man leaves his father and mother, he's joined to his wife, the two are united into one. The last verse of that chapter says they were naked and had no shame. The very next verse, we are introduced to the serpent in Genesis 3:1. I think it's interesting that the very next verse, after we see this picture of oneness and intimacy, the way God designed a marriage to be, in the very next verse, here comes the serpent. That is not a coincidence. That is by design, because your marriage is opposed. The same serpent who opposed Adam and Eve is opposing you and your marriage. See, you're not only under attack individually, When we talk about spiritual warfare, it's not only you individually, it's also about your family, your marriage, your home. Because there is an intruder in your home, an intruder in your bedroom, in your kitchen, inserting himself into your conversations, interfering with your family. Your marriage is under attack. But here's the thing, God knew that that was going to happen, and he prepared us for that. He put something inside of men and inside of women to prepare us and to help us to fight that battle effectively and to find victory. Let me go back to the differences between men and women. In warfare, in a battle, there are a couple of things that are essential for victory to happen. One of those things is you've got to have a will to fight. There has to be some sort of aggression in a battle. Otherwise, you're going to be run over and defeated. Like if there's a battle going on, somebody's coming against you, and you just stand there and do nothing, you're going to lose that battle. You have to be willing to be aggressive. You have to be willing to fight in order to win that battle. The other thing that's necessary is you've got to communicate. You have to communicate with others who are involved in that battle with you. Otherwise, everything's going to fall apart and there's no coordination. So those two things are essential. Aggression, a willingness to fight, and communication. You know what every study of children has shown us about the difference between boys and girls? Girls are more verbal and less aggressive, and boys are more aggressive and less verbal. We see this from a very early age. They've done studies on the types of dreams that little boys have and little girls have. Little boys tend to have dreams that are very violent, that include a lot of fighting. Little girls tend to have dreams that are romantic, that include a lot of verbal dialogue. That's just a difference that is a part of how God created us. The other thing they did is they measured muscle movements. And again, very young ages to see, okay, with little girls and little boys, which muscles do they use the most? You know what they found with little girls, which muscles they use the most? You already know the answer to this. It's the facial muscles, especially around the mouth. Those muscles get a lot of exercise because girls are verbal, right? More verbal than boys for the most part. What they found with boys is the muscles boys use the most is the larger muscles, the arms and the legs. So what that tells us is all of this tells us by our very nature, girls have a bent towards verbal communication and boys have a bent towards aggression, towards fighting. Both of those are valuable and both of those are necessary spiritually and in a marriage because your marriage is under attack. And victory in that battle requires a willingness to fight against the enemy and an investment in communicating with each other and with God. Both of those are necessary, a commitment to fight and a commitment to communicate. And God created marriage in such a way that a man and a woman come together and they both bring a strength into that marriage that can help them overcome the enemy. Now, those strengths can be used in a very wrong way. Those strengths can be abused to harm the marriage. They were intended to help the marriage and to strengthen the marriage. So, men, I got to talk to the men first. Men, you cannot be passive spiritually. Your wife is not called to be the spiritual leader of the home. You are. Ladies, I don't want any amens right now. No elbows to the ribs. Let me do the talking. Men, we have two choices. The Bible talks about Adam in the Old Testament. And the next few verses here in Genesis 3, we see this. The serpent has a conversation with Eve where he lies to her. He twists and opposes everything God has told them, tempting her to do something that will lead to death. And while that conversation is happening, and when Eve gives in to that temptation and disobeys God, where is Adam the whole time? He is standing right there the whole time, and he does nothing to stop it. Men, please hear this. The devil himself was attacking this man's wife, deceiving this man's wife, tempting her to lead her down a path that Adam knew would lead to death and destruction. And he stood there and watched it and did nothing to stop it. Like, do something. Pick up a shovel, crush it with a stone, do something. But he stood there passive and uninvolved. Men, your wife is under attack. The same serpent who targeted Eve in the garden, that same serpent is targeting your wife. And if you don't believe that, or if you don't know how he's targeting her, just ask her, because she can tell you. The wounds that she has sustained over the years by things that have been done to her, things that have been said to her or about her, the lies this culture has tried to tell her about her value and what she needs to do to be valuable, to be enough, to be noticed, to be worthwhile, your wife is under attack. Men, what are you going to do about that? Because part of our calling as a husband is to fight for our wives and to protect them spiritually. Now, here's the good news. You don't have to follow in the footsteps of the first Adam. Because the Bible tells us there is a second Adam, and his name is Jesus. And Ephesians 5 tells us he fought for his bride. He sacrificed for his bride. He went out of his way to provide spiritually for his bride. And listen to this, he lives in you. You are not just a son of the first Adam. You have been redeemed and renewed by the second Adam, Jesus. That means you belong to him. That means you have a warrior inside of you. That means you are fully equipped and prepared to be the man your wife needs you to be. Who is he, this warrior that we're talking about, this one who lives inside of us? The Bible tells us over and over again that as followers of Christ, we are united with Christ. Just the book of Ephesians by itself, about a dozen times, says we are united with Christ. Who is he, this one we're united with? He's the Lion of the tribe of Judah. He is the God who commands angel armies. He's the one who led a victory procession over powerful demonic authorities that he defeated, and he calls you more than a conqueror. He is the one who says he will crush Satan under our feet. He says, I've given you authority to trample on snakes and scorpions. He is the one who came to this earth and heroically laid down his life on an old rugged cross, and 3 days later walked out of that tomb alive and victorious. And he is the one who one day will return to this earth riding on a white horse with eyes blazing like fire, with a robe brighter than the sun, holding a sword that is covered in the blood of his enemies. That is the God we serve. That's who Jesus is. And men, he lives inside of you. We may be sons of Adam, but we have been bought and renewed and redeemed by the blood of Jesus. And he is our commander, and he calls us into the battle to fight. I'm talking to the men first. Because men, while both men and women have responsibility for the health of our marriages, it primarily rests on our shoulders, men. Because we are the head of the household. We are called to be the spiritual leaders of our families. And so God is calling you out, calling us out to be the warriors he created us to be. Your wife needs you to be that warrior. Your children need you to be that warrior. This church needs you to be that warrior. This corrupt culture that we live in needs you to be that warrior. So man, I encourage you to read the stories. Read stories like David and Goliath. Read about David's mighty men in the Old Testament and some of the things they did. Those stories are fascinating. Let that inspire something inside of you. Read about Joshua and the things he did. Read about Nehemiah and how he stood up to opposition. Read about the armor that God has provided for us in Ephesians chapter 6. Dig into those stories and let God renew within you a sense of calling to be a warrior for his kingdom and for your family, because God is calling us into battle. Now for the ladies, as I said, the men are fighters and the women are communicators. Ladies, be wise in how you communicate with your husband about the battle that you're in, about the attacks against you and the attacks against your marriage. Be wise in how you do that. Because there is a way to communicate that invites him into that battle, that inspires that warrior to emerge, that invites him to pick up the sword and go to battle to protect you and to protect your family. There is a way to do that. But there's about 1,000 ways to communicate that will shut him down and cause him to walk away from the battle. Through words and attitudes and responses to him that will make him feel discouraged, that can make him feel like a failure, that can make him feel like nothing he does is ever good enough. And you don't want that. What you don't want is a docile and passive man who sits on the recliner doing nothing while you are fighting these battles alone because you've convinced him he doesn't have what it takes. There is a warrior inside of him. Tap into that. He needs to know that he has what it takes. Not to be belittled and not to be convinced that he can never get it right. He's a warrior and he needs to hear that from you. He needs to know that you believe in him. He needs to know that you value him. He needs to know that you need him. He needs to know that you see his strength and you need that strength. Be wise in how you communicate with your husband about the battle that you're in. I hope this all makes sense. Men are gifted warriors. It is our natural bent. Women are gifted communicators. It is your natural bent. We both need to use those strengths in our marriage to bring restoration and protection. The big idea today is simply this. We're called to oneness in our marriages. And here's what that means. It means that we are committed to pursuing solutions when there are problems, rather than just stepping back and saying, it's unhealthy, it's unhappy, but that's okay. I'm just going to accept that. That's the way it is. It's not. We're called to oneness. And that also means that we are committed to being completely faithful sexually to our spouse. We're going to talk about that next week. We're called to oneness, and that means we are committed to fighting together for each other, not against each other. It means for men that we live out our calling as husbands to fight for our wives and to love them sacrificially. It means, ladies, as wives, to respect your husbands and show honor to him with your words and your responses to him. We are called to oneness. This is what restoration looks like. It takes work. It takes time. It requires making some changes. And it's not easy, but it is worth it. So, Father, I want to pray this morning for everyone here in this place. I pray especially for the marriages represented here in this room. Lord, that you would bring strength and healing where that is needed. That you would bring restoration where that is needed. Lord, that as men, we would take up the shield and take up the sword as you have called us to and fight to defend our families, to defend our wives, to defend our kids. And that we would not back away from that, Lord, but that we would walk in victory because you are victorious. And for the ladies, Lord, I pray that you would give them wisdom in communicating well with their husbands in a way that strengthens the marriage, in a way that brings about a deeper sense of unity, a deeper sense of oneness. Lord, I pray that there will be a willingness in each marriage here to work on the areas that are difficult, to find resolution together, not to fight against each other, not to pull away from each other, but to come together and to work together to build the kind of marriage you intended them to be. Father, for those here today who are not yet married, but one day will be, I pray, Lord, that you would bring to their hearts the preparation that they need, that willingness, that readiness to be the husband or to be the wife that you will one day call them to be. And for those here today who once were married and no longer are, God, I know that there are wounds connected with that. And so I pray that you would bring healing to those areas where they have been wounded, those areas where they have been hurt. Lord, would you come in as our healer and bring the healing, the comfort, and the strength that is needed there. Lord, in all these things, we want to live lives that honor you. We want our marriages, our homes, our families to represent you well. And to be a demonstration to the world around us of what it looks like to live a life that honors Christ. In his name we pray. Amen.